flavour.
This is Cambridge Radio.
I'm going to read you the menu. It's fantastic.
So we get better flavour because of the fen soil.
I've drunk more beer since I came here and bought my two barrels than I've ever done in my life before, I think.
I shouldn't have said Hellmann's. They don't make it from Hellmann's.
So you've got this big sticky mess when you start off.
Pizza pots pies.
My wife's cakes are selling up hot cakes. Brilliant, thank you.
The time is right for this sort of thing.
Food is everything.
Cambridge is right for this sort of thing.
What's it like?
Good afternoon and welcome to Flavour, with an hour of local food and drink news and stories. And in today's episode, we are going to find out about good gut health, free food foraging, foodie volunteering opportunities, and the effect of the dry weather on food growers in our area.
We'll also have local food news, free food information, news from social media, and at the end of the programme, a look at local food jobs available.
So, let's begin with the weather. And we have had the driest spring across England since 1961. Farmers are increasingly concerned about tending their crops during this dry spell, and when will we get a significant amount of rain? Well, I wanted to see how the weather has been affecting places smaller than farms, so I visited Co Farm, a market garden off Barnwell Road that donates a lot of its harvest to local food banks.
For volunteers at Co Farm, the day begins at 10 a.m. The group meets underneath a large, beautiful, wooden-constructed slanted roof, all held together securely with no nails. Rainwater collects off the roof into a giant water butt. But everything is short of water.
I mean, we had a couple of years ago, 2022, we had a really, really dry April and May, and come June, when all the leaves were coming out in the trees, they were falling. So we had all the grasses were scorched in June here in Cambridge.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're really seeing massive impact on land, soil and, you know, growing. So I think this year looks as though it's going to be quite challenging.
Yeah.
Yeah.
At the moment, we're in what's called the hungry gap. Over the last couple of weeks, we've noticed that our harvest is coming to an end. So our winter crops have stopped producing and our spring, summer aren't yielding just yet. This week we harvested our purple sprouting, lots of rhubarb. We've got lots of fresh herbs growing on site. Oh, and our artichokes we harvested for the first time this week, which is really exciting. But the crops that we'll harvest, hopefully in the next 4 weeks or so, it will be things like our broad beans, the garlic will be ready. Just behind us we have some gooseberries, which are looking really good. And things like our artichokes should continue. And we've got red strawberries forming already, so I don't reckon it'll be too long until we've got strawberries as well.
And I guess with the dry weather, the strawberries will be more concentrated, more juicy, stronger
flavour. It was some combination of the temperatures at night and the dryness or something meant they're 20% bigger this year. So, you know, there's a silver lining if you're into strawberry farming.
Yeah.
All sounds pretty rosy so far. Well,
it's been the driest March and April for a century. And of course, we're in the hottest and driest part of the UK anyway, being in East Anglia. Yeah, we are feeling the effects of it quite a bit here on the farm.
Today's jobs on site are planting, weeding and watering. Co Farm attracts volunteers of all ages and not just the green-fingered.
We just started this year. The ground is very hard. So if you're weeding or you're digging potatoes, as we do right now,
it's back workout.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a workout.
Yeah. Also, it's quite cold as well. It's like, I don't know, nothing is right.
It's a hell of a lot of work growing your own food. And I think that's where the power of community and everybody pitching in and doing a bit on volunteer days like this, it's just brilliant. It's a big site and there's so much food being grown here and everyone's doing their little bit, which makes all the difference. So, yeah, it's great to be a part of.
It's a really lovely community. You can come and you can just get your head down and do your work or you can chat. You know, and often it's people that you don't know. But the learning is part of my retirement planning, you know, is to live more sustainably and learn from all the expertise here and just learn by doing. I think that's the thing for me. There's a lot of reasons to come here, you know, versus having an allotment. It's a daily commitment. Whereas here, perfect. Perfect, yeah. It's definitely a learning by doing.
the smells.
Oh, yeah.
The smells of gardening, yes. The smells of harvesting, of uprooting.
Also the taste. I feel like if you actually dig a carrot and spend like 15 minutes digging it out of the ground, it's the sweetest carrot you'll ever eat.
Has there been any trouble with growing this year?
I do know that last time they mentioned they expect a lot more rain. Because this is a community farm, it's fully run volunteer basis. So they do expect rain to take care of some of the growing for a bit. But obviously because there's been none now, you have to wait for people to water. And so overall, everything is much slower, not to mention the weather's so unpredictable. It's not sunny when it wants to be. So it's been unusual.
Every time we have a session, we have two co-farmers just constantly watering. We do try to only water crops that really need it. We are very aware of the water situation in Cambridge and we try to be aware and careful with our water usage. But obviously, in order for crops to survive and thrive, they do need it.
I guess it depends on your systems, right? Because we are a small market garden, so we can just about manage with our water supply. But when you are a bigger grower, then it gets trickier when you've been depending for like centuries over just rainfall. So there's going to be a lot of having to rethink what we're doing. Yeah, adapt.
This has got water in it, yeah?
I don't think it does, really.
If you just give it three taps like you're knocking on a door.
Yeah, so really excitingly, we've got our 54,000 litre water harvesting tank. The amount of water that captures is roughly about the amount of water that we use on average every month. So yeah, it's exciting that we've got the structure there ready to harvest the water. We just need the clouds to burst and do their thing to help us fill it up.
Forecasts for Cambridge don't look like we're in for monsoon weather anytime soon. You watch though. The moment we broadcast this, it's going to bucket down. So, what's the solution when your growing plans become growing pains?
Yeah, we've had to adjust a couple of things with our planting. So we were going to plant our tomatoes after our brassicas had been removed, our sort of curly kales and cavolo nero. But the ground is just so compact and dry, we just didn't stand any chance of being able to hand dig with co-farmers in the soil. We're actually stood next to the patch now and you can see these massive cracks in the soil. You might see that in the height of summer, but to see soil like this, it is a bit concerning.
If the soil is better, you know, the nutrition comes from the soil.
Does the weather move things along? Do you then have to change plans and plant things earlier to take advantage of the warmer weather?
Yeah, our tomatoes, you might see some activity at the moment. Mm-hmm. We've been planting our tomatoes out for the past three sessions. I believe that's earlier than we might have done in previous years. We've also noticed this morning when we were walking around the site that actually our garlic is about to flower. But the reason it's trying to flower is that it perhaps hasn't had as much water as it would like. So, yeah, there are some elements where it then means that you have to change plans perhaps or harvest things slightly earlier. We've had to change our crop plans because we can't plant the tomatoes after where the kales are because the soil is just so tough.
Lots of positivity on CoFarm. We can work our way around this. Despite the dry, gaping cracks in the ground and the near-empty water tanks, the volunteers, they're so keen. And managing a site of this size, it's about an acre, I think, they've been able to harvest and donate about 25 tonnes of fresh fruit and veg to Cambridge's local food hubs over the last few years. But this dry weather is making them change their plans and adapt to keep those goods coming. So next, I went to Trumpington Allotments to visit Susanna Colasso, an allotmenteer who is out there come rain or shine, to get her thoughts.
Things are growing very well, but because of the dryness, we're needing to water things that in other years we wouldn't have to. Yeah. One of the things that can help reduce this is to use mulches of various sorts, straw, hay, grass cuttings, even cardboard on top of the soil, keeps the moisture inside once it's there. So yes, a lot of watering is going on. Although the slugs and snails, when it's cooler, are out, but they're not devastating things in the way they did last year because the sort of load of pests was huge due to the mild winter and the mild spring.
Another thing I was interested in was the soil quality. What the extremes of the last year have done to the soil?
This soil here is incredibly light and it's got a lot of gravel and stone in it. So most people improve the structure of their soil by adding as much home composted vegetation to help it to retain the moisture. It takes forever.
Okay.
76 was a very dry year.
Yeah.
And we did have water restrictions then. That was when they were encouraging people to put a brick in their toilet system so the flush wasn't using too much water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What do you think of the comparison of 76 to 25?
So far, it seems similar. I can't remember how quickly it got hot in 76. I do remember also that summer, there were swarms of ladybirds. Because I was cycling from home and I just got covered in ladybirds. I don't know if we'll get the same effect this year. We'll see.
When you're facing extremes in an allotment, I guess that means you have to garden to extremes.
You do. I have always grown a number of different varieties of, say, beans or cabbages or anything, because some cope better under different conditions. So one year you'll have really lovely borlottis and another year they'll go pleur, but the climbing French bean cobra or whatever will do really nicely. So you just balance out, I think. Jackdaws, little cheeky sparrows.
Do you become a little bit of a bird aficionado, or it's just all part of the scene for you?
It's a bit part of the scene, but my dad and brother were huge birdies, whatever you like to call them, twitchers, tweeters, and they could say, oh, that's a so-and-so just from the songs and stuff. I can't do that. However, I do like the swifts. We have a swift tower in the community orchard, and they're back,
which is
really nice, yeah.
I remember swifts, I read, are always on the wing. They very rarely land, as opposed to swallows who do.
Yes, and house martins land to get mud and stuff. So, yes, swifts only land when they go to nest.
Mm.
Yeah, and until they've found their nesting place, so they fledge and then they fly around for 3 or 4 years before they pair up and find somewhere to nest. Mm. And because they've never landed anywhere, when they try and find the nest, they're not very good at getting into the small crevices, and they tend to bang themselves, so they're called bangers. Not with mash.
Just because we've had these extremes, how do you feel about it? Because right now it sounds like things are pretty good.
They are pretty good. I mean, it's hard work. You go home in the evening and your arms are nearly at your ankles because you've been watering so much. But I think you have to be positive. If you were negative about everything, you wouldn't do anything, would you?
No.
Just being outside, listening to the birds. I mean, this year, because of the warmth, there have been so many butterflies. It's fantastic. It's really beautiful. Unfortunately, the large whites are out, so watch out with your brassicas, folks. But otherwise, it's just so lovely watching everything.
Right now, rhubarb is about to come springing up.
Now, that is a plant greedy for water.
Mm.
So in the spring, if you mulch it well while the soil is wet, you don't have to water quite so much. Was it Jeff Hamilton said even if it's rained for a week, you could still water your rhubarb and it would like it? So you have to be careful, I think. On our allotment, we are not allowed to use hose pipes. Mm. And that's why you have the dipping trough, because otherwise somebody might just stick a hose pipe
all
and
day.
Leave it. Yeah, yeah, and all night. And that would really use much more water and be stupid, I'm afraid to say.
Mm.
So we're really doing our best to harvest the rainwater when we get it.
And that's what we're standing next to right now. These are giant blue water tanks.
If you look at the size and shape of the polytunnel.
Just looking down here?
Loads of water comes off it.
Yes.
So there was someone who kindly donated these because they no longer required them.
Oh, wow.
So now we have to set up a rainwater collecting thing and fill these up. But maybe next time you come, Matt, they'll be in situ and you can see how it works. Last year, we had a very poor fruit crop from most of the trees, mainly due to late frosts. Once the fruit had set, if you get a frost, it tends to make them fall off. This year, all of the fruit bushes and trees are full of blossom, and that's all set into fruit. So I think this year is going to be a bumper crop. But one thing you need to be aware of with apples and pears and plums, if you've got too much fruit on, you need to thin it out, because then you get nice big pieces of fruit and you don't drain your fruit tree too much, and they'll probably give you a nice crop next year. If they give a heavy crop this year, you may get very little next. So you sort of balance out how you treat the trees.
Blimey, so you have to school the tree.
Yes, yeah. So you treat them like your babies, basically, yeah. And make sure they're behaving.
So naturally, a tree will want to produce a lot, whereas what you're looking for is like size and succulents.
And to not drain too much of the resources from the tree, because their response to being heavily laden is, well, I've probably produced enough babies so I can take it easy next year. And then you get biannual production or a very low yield the second year. So it is a balancing act, really. My father was a horticulturist and we had a small holding with apple trees in it. And I look after the community orchard here. So you just learn as you go along all the time. Nobody knows everything about anything, do they? If you get a cold night below 1 or 2 or even 0 or into minus figures, you have damage done to your fruit that has set. Commercial orchards will actually spray their trees with water, and that acts as a sort of coating to protect them, and they don't get damaged so much. Even if you listen to the weather forecast, they'll warn your gardeners, be careful, there's a frost tonight. You know, cover over your potatoes, for example, because if it's cold and they've come up above the ground, then they get killed by the frost, so that puts them back. But just some sheets of newspaper or EnviroMesh or anything like that over them protects them and gives you a better crop.
Well, lovely. Thank you very much, Susanna.
You're very welcome. Right, I'm going to go and water my tomatoes and things now.
You know, the Met Office says that rainfall has been almost half of what it should have been so far. There's no official drought alert yet, but without substantial rainfall soon, farmers are going to need more water to irrigate their crops. You know, this dryness, it's all to do with the jet stream moving above the UK this year rather than across us like it normally does. So we've missed all of the unseasonal weather that we normally get. This dry spell could mean less crops produced by us, more importing, more fuel used, and so on.
Well, now with details of free food available in and around Cambridge, and the information about what's available and where to get it comes from the Olio app, which exists so that people's or businesses' surplus food doesn't go to waste.
That's right. And today's look at Olio for Cambridge shows us that Carly in the CB24 area, she's giving away 4 loaves of white bread. They've been in her freezer previously, but now she needs the room, so they've got to go. Tom next to the Cambridge Central train station has 2 long baguettes and a ciabatta available to anybody who wants to collect them, while Yara near Ditton Meadows has a bunch of golden delicious apples free to anyone who wants them. Don't forget, though, that Olio does more than just free food. People often give away food-related items. So, for example, Anne off Brooklands Avenue is offering a Brita water filter jug. M on Cherry Hinton Road has a set of kitchen scales to give away. And people also sell things, like Amelia on Mill Road, who has a lightly used George Foreman grill for £5, complete with drip tray. All that rounds up our quick look at what's on Olio for Saturday.
And there's another free app called Too Good To Go. And this has unsold food from restaurants and shops, often at less than half price. Rather than specifying each leftover item, the surplus food is simply packaged as a magic bag ready for you to take home, instead of it being binned at the end of the day's trading. Now, on to our first news briefing, starting with a new restaurant called Margaret's. Opening on the 12th of June, Margaret's will be run by the team of the Michelin-starred Restaurant 22 and can be found a few doors down from them at 18 Chesterton Road. Margaret's menu will feature the best of British produce and has been named in honour of one of Restaurant 22's regular diners.
The Gog Farm Shop, which is more than just a farm shop, it's also a popular venue. It has food trucks every Thursday night as we head into the summer. So, on June the 5th, they will be hosting Noma Dough and the Pasta Bar 22. And just so you know, parking is free at the Gogs, so no worries there.
Al Pomodoro is a popular Italian restaurant by the junction of Hills Road and Cherry Hinton Road. One of the owners, Emiliano, used to run a street food van in Cambridge, selling Napolese pizzas. Now, El Pomodoro has opened a delicatessen right next to their restaurant, so you can come and stock up on some fine Italian specialities before sitting down to some fine Italian specialities. That's all for now. More news later.
People like to say that you should trust your gut. Well, that's good advice as long as your gut is healthy. Last year, Heidi Matheron set up her business, The Nuffin Man, selling products that support gut health without necessarily compromising on those other things that you like. This is her story. These are her products.
I started the Nuffin Man, which actually was a play off of the Muffin Man. So, yep, you got it, spot on. From my hormone health journey. So when I was 17, I was having a lot of issues starting my menstrual cycles. And finally was diagnosed with PCOS when I was about 18, I think.
What is PCOS? Because there's obviously might be some guys listening to this and thinking, what the hell is that?
So it's polycystic ovary syndrome. And essentially it means that you have cysts on your ovary. It doesn't have to be on both. So that can cause issues with menstruating on time. I had friends as well who had PCOS, and one of them was put onto medication that it started to trigger in my mind how absurd it is that women with hormone health issues are being prescribed diabetes medication to help them with their fertility journey. And that sparked my interest into, could it be something to do with food then? This medication that you get with diabetes, it was to essentially help them to stabilize their own blood sugar. And I thought, well, hang on a second, prescribe metformin to ladies with PCOS who are looking to become pregnant. That sparked my journey of looking into a more holistic way to get my periods back on track. So, yeah, I knew that I had to do something because the doctors weren't helping, and removing all gluten and all dairy from my diet had massive benefit. But obviously, it's just not sustainable. So I would fall in and out of doing these crazy diets and then binge eating, which I see as a eating disorder. To me, eating when I get home from a long day of work is way more than just fueling my body. It's like the only time I get to relax that day. I thought, what's a meal that I massively miss? And it was pasta. Yeah, I started to have a look at some gluten-free pastas that weren't the usual ones you find in the supermarket that just go mushy after a little while on the hob. Because my goal is not to be selling to just the gluten-free market. I am not gluten-free. It is to sell to people who have an interest in their gut and hormone health. I can't say that I've healed my symptoms or my PCOS. I know that it's something that's probably always going to be there, but I have regular periods. I don't have any pain anymore, and realise as well the benefits that my gut has had from this journey. And not just have I healed some of my PCOS symptoms, but my bloating has gone away. My skin, sort of, I don't suffer with that cystic acne anymore. I'm a carby girl. I'm not looking to do these no-carb diets. I feel like everyone should enjoy life. And yeah, food has changed so much for me. So I want to help people to see that it's actually easy to do this without restriction. So I've started with pasta. I hope to expand the range into more things in the future. But so say, for example, one of them that I've got, it contains red lentils, chickpea and flaxseed. Also, everyone is very excitable about protein content everywhere. And it contains 24.6 grams of protein per 100 grams. My sort of guide is trying to get 30 to 35 grams of protein per meal. So as soon as you've had a portion of this, you're over 50% there. If you're adding a pasta sauce to this, you don't necessarily taste the flaxseed in it. It's going to keep you full for longer and not have those blood sugar spikes, which I think is so important for everyone to keep an eye on, but especially those dealing with hormone health. PCOS has been given a nickname of diabetes of the ovaries. So really paying attention to your blood sugar is crucial, and I feel like it's massively helped me.
You've got a couple more in here.
Yes. This one probably is my favourite one, buckwheat tagliatelle. It's got magnesium in it, which is a fantastic for sleep and things. And again, when you're struggling with hormone health, like getting a crucial amount of sleep is so important for your day. You know, it's got so many benefits for everyone, not even those dealing with hormone issues. It's got high iron, with it saying buckwheat. I think a lot of people have assumed that it still contains gluten, but it doesn't. The nutrients, the vitamin levels, just really, really great, which then leads to it being good for heart health. And then the final one that I have with me is yellow lentil cacareche. This one, again, protein content, 23 grams per 100 grams portion, Fibre is 9 grams, and it only takes 5 to 6 minutes to boil. So this is my quick go-to. If I've had a long day at work, a little like tomato and basil pasta sauce, pop that on the hob for 5 minutes, and it's so lovely. I've had a lot of repeat buyers for that one. These I can have 100 grams and not feel like I need to sleep after. I just do feel like we should be able to have a nice big meal and not feel terrible afterwards. I'm a massive believer of ingredients over calories in and calories out. To me, if you're having 300 calories worth of Snickers in comparison to 300 calories worth of yellow lentil pasta, Tim Spector, I'm sure you're probably familiar with him, amazing. Like, I did his Zoe app. I was doing my own kind of research while I had the continuous glucose monitor, because it was a great opportunity to see how things affect my body. But yeah, the continuous glucose monitor, when I was wearing it, I think one evening I had a cheese sourdough toasty and some soup, and generally it's still something I have now and again. My blood sugar spiked in comparison to having a big bowl of yellow lentil casereche with bolognese on top of it. Calorie wise, I think they were both on par. The spike was completely different, and having such a large spike, when it drops you feel hungrier again. So throughout the day, when you're eating these low calorie meals, you probably end up craving more. Like, I don't have these binge episodes that I used to have, because I feel full and satisfied after my dinner, and I'm getting so much more than just a bowl of pasta with this. I'm getting so many health benefits, and I have worked in the hospital and seen that most people are just prescribed a lot of medication to help things. I just wish that more people knew that looking into your diet can actually be such a game changer. I've got two releasing soon. One of them will be chickpea and turmeric penne. That's a 23 gram protein per 100 grams pasta as well. And it's got quite a turmeric kick in it. And then a spaghetti made from buckwheat.
How do people buy these pastas from you?
I've got a social media page. I think that's probably how people are finding the website as now. And that has a link to the website. So it's thenuffinman.co.uk.
The Nuffin Man, all one word, yeah.
All one word. Then you're able to go in and select which pastas you want. You can also build a box, which will then give you a little bit of a discount as well before you find which one that you really like and want to continue purchasing. I personally would get them all. The people that I'm hoping to reach out to, which is everyone, but those who are really looking to look internally at their health, gut health and hormone health.
Some of the ones out there, even in the supermarkets, don't have the qualities that, by the sounds of it, yours absolutely has.
I hope they find people and people find them and they can enjoy a big bowl of pasta for dinner, because that's what life's about.
Thank you so much, Heidi.
Thank you.
A life without carbs is no life at all. And that's a quote from Heidi's Instagram page. And if you're wondering about the name of the business, The Nuffin Man, it means nothing harmful, nothing ultra-processed, and obviously nothing better. And that's taken from her website, thenuffinman.co.uk, where you can find many pasta recipes and order from her pasta range, and includes those that you've heard about here, and others like organic sorghum fusilli and organic yellow lentil casereche. I hope I pronounced that right. So you needn't murder your gut the way I just murdered Italian.
Coming up after the break, we'll go foraging with Chef Steve Thompson, take a visit to Cambridge Market, and catch up with Transition Cambridge. See you in two.
Cambridge Radio.
Cambridge Radio podcasts tell the story of our city and the people who live here. Debate the issues that matter to you with CAMS Politics.
If we really want to support the government's ambition for growth, we can't do it here just in Cambridge. We have to partner with other cities.
Follow your local teams in From the Terraces.
With the right partner, perhaps he has got the potential to do some damage, but he looks a little bit like a lost sheep to me. He doesn't kind of fit the pattern of United's play.
Get your cultural fix in Cambridge Arts Roundup.
One of the things that's been interesting is to figure out different strategies to display my own work, but also figure out strategies to just rehang existing paintings.
Listen to your favourite Cambridge podcast on Radio Player or wherever you get your podcasts.
There's a new look to retirement. It's Strawberry Fields in Stapleford, a brand new Rangeford retirement village. Luxury independent living with a vibrant community. There's a restaurant and bar, along with a village green, gym, spa, and much more. Take a tour of the stunning 1, 2 and 3 bedroom show homes and find complete peace of mind at Strawberry Fields in Stapleford.
Rangefordvillages.co.uk. Exclusively for over 60s. Step into the world of virtual reality at VR Extra, Cambridge's first virtual reality centre. Battle zombies, escape lost worlds, or challenge your friends in our action-packed VR games. VR Extra is perfect for families, parties, and corporate events, with customised packages available. And when you've survived the apocalypse, grab a coffee, smoothies, and fresh sandwiches in our cafe. Find us at 65 Regent Street, Cambridge, next to Parker's Peace. Book now at vrextra.com/Cambridge. VR Extra, where family fun meets virtual adventure.
Catch up with your favourite shows online.
Go to cambridge.radio and look for On Demand.
Earlier, we talked about the dry spell affecting allotments and market gardens. Well, the east of England, we're generally the driest region, I think, and foraging isn't immune either. So, let's catch up with Steve Thompson, the foraging chef, to see if he is full of eastern promise.
The weather is being really weird at the moment. It's being sunny, it's being windy, it's being not very rainy. So how has that had an effect on foraging, Steve?
With the dry and the sunshine, it's been great for some of the floral picking. So at the moment, we've been out picking elderflower, which is best picked early in the morning on a bright, sunny day. It smells so strong, and about 30 seconds later, you could feel the wind suddenly pick up, the grey clouds come over, and the smell just goes. So it really is worth picking that elderflower on a sunny, bright morning. The ash keys are just starting on ash trees, so that's well worth looking at. It's a lesser forage product. Ash is part of the olive family, and the keys have that sort of flavour to them. Eaten straight, they're a bit inedible because of their texture. They're fibrous, they're rough, they're cardboardy. So I'm really selling them as a product to use. But we then lacto-ferment them. So we simply vacuum seal them down with 2% of the volume of salt. So for every 100 grams of ash keys, 2 grams of salt. And we leave them to ferment. And once they finish fermenting and they're nice and sour and more acidic than 4.6 pH, then we take them out of the little bit of brine that's in there now and we dry them out. We then grind them up and we use them as a spice, and you get this wonderful sour olive spice. So it's absolutely fantastic for that.
But why is it called lacto-fermentation if there's no milk involved?
Two reasons. The bacteria that's involved is lactobacillus, and what is created at the end, which is where the preservation comes from. So lactobacillus works by eating all the natural sugars in something and converting it into lactic acid. This then preserves through acidity, so hence why the pH matters. So we're making the element more acidic, which means that other bacteria cannot survive, so therefore it's preserved. You can do it just using jars. So sterilise your jars really well, whack them in a hot oven, give them 20 minutes to say 100, and then put your ingredients in, and we make a wet brine for that. So you would just make a 2% wet brine. For every litre of water, you put 20 grams of salt. Or you can go and get yourself a cheap little vac pack machine and just do it as a dry brine, so where you literally add 2% weight of salt to the dry product, vacuum seal it, leave it on your windowsill and forget about it.
I think I like that idea.
And you can literally watch it and it will swell up like a football size. If you're familiar with the process, you'll be able to smell when it's ready. Once you open it, you can smell all the friendly bacteria. If not, you can pick up pH readers for about a fiver online.
So how long would you leave it for then?
It all depends on temperature, really. If it's a nice warm couple of days, 2 or 3 days will be fine. If it's cool, it could take 7 to 10.
So it's a really quick process then. And then you have to grind it up in order to get the flavour release, I presume?
We grind it up more for texture, because then we can use it in multiple things. So we take it out after we've fermented it, we dry it up, dry it out, dehydrate it, and then we grind it up. And that's really just so we have it in powder form. Then we can use it in multiple dishes. We can use it as if you'd use a normal spice, or we can use it to infuse in things. There's just multiple ways of using it.
So could you use it without dehydrating it? As you say, it's got this lovely olive flavour. Is it possible to use it once it's just been taken out of the vac pack?
You can do if you pick them young enough, but it's all about the texture. So you'll know when you handle them. If they're really green and soft, then you can probably chop them up quite fine and use them in dishes. But if they're starting to get a little bit older, then they'll be too fibrous.
look very carefully at your ash keys.
Yeah, just get to know your ingredients, really. It's like with anything, if it feels too hard to eat, it is too hard to eat normally.
Can you please talk me through kombucha? Because this is something that I really want to have a go at doing, but I'm really scared about doing.
Yeah, so kombucha is what we're using is we're using a SCOBY, which is a symbiotic culture of bacteria and yeast. Now, to get one of those, you can buy them online. They're really easy to find and not expensive, or you can just use some raw kombucha. Just check when you buy it at the shop that it's not been pasteurised. And basically what we're doing is we're adding that into a strong caffeinated sugary tea. And that is it.
Because they're actually quite expensive to buy, aren't they? Because obviously people sell this, but hey, why not make your own?
Yeah, exactly. I think it's just a convenience thing why they're so expensive, because they're very simple to make, and I think once you get into it, it's something that can be quite addictive and quite fun.
Anything else that you would suggest that at the moment we should really be looking for?
Yeah, using up lots of things that are in the hedgerow at the moment. So we're driving down the road and we're seeing loads of, like, the dog rose in the hedgerow. And dog rose is a fantastic little flavour. It's a rose that we forget about, so we don't have to damage our lovely garden roses to get those rose petals, and we can go and get the dog roses out of the bushes instead. And what we tend to do with that is we use it exactly the same and we make rose water. It's not quite as strong as a lot of the garden roses. I tend to find the rule of thumb is that the lighter the colour rose, the less the flavour. So when you get to the really deep red ones, they're a lot stronger in flavour. The lighter pinky yellowy ones tend to be a little bit milder. Bear that in mind when picking on whether you like really intense rose flavour or whether you want it as a bit of a background. So what we tend to do with it is we make it into a rose water, and then we can use it in products such as making harissa or other hot sauces and things like that. And I find that rose, for me personally, is a bit strong. I find it a bit overpowering in things like Turkish Delight. But when you're using it as a body to build up flavour, then it's a wonderful little flavour profile to have.
So how would you prepare your rose petals?
So we simply just take the rose petals off. We don't wash them. We don't do anything to them. So we try not to pick them from the side of a busy road. Not necessarily because of the pollutants, actually, but more because it kicks up loads of grit off the road when cars go past. So if you can find it somewhere that's not got battered by the cars, then that's better. And we literally just soak it in water. So we pack petals and water, put them in a jar and leave them in the fridge for a couple of days and let them infuse. And then we take that out. And if it's not intense enough, we can then reduce that down. We try and keep it fresh and as is, and then we turn it into the product afterwards, because then we keep that natural uncooked flavour for as long as possible.
It's interesting because rose water is as simple as it sounds. I always thought you'd have to add sugar to it or do something different, or citric acid or something more scientific, but that's as simple as it is.
Sometimes things are just easy.
I like that idea. And I like the sound of the rose petal harissa.
So for that, we would lacto-ferment basic chilies, garlic, some onion in there, depending on where we want it to go, maybe a tiny bit of apple as well. And we often do it with rose and hogweed seeds. So we crush a load of hogweed seeds in there to add a cardamom-y, orange peely vibe to it. And we would mulch all that down, add 2% worth of its weight of the entirety of the pulp in salt, vac seal it down and leave it to ferment. Once it's fermented and it's down to about 4.4, 4.5 pH, we want to keep it as least acidic as we can, because otherwise the more acidic you go, the more the acid starts to take over in flavour. And we would add the rose water into that before we started the fermentation process, so it has a chance to amalgamate. And then literally once it's finished fermenting, we blend it up again and add a little bit of finishing oil. So we just finish it with a nice extra virgin rapeseed oil, jar it up, vac pack it up, store it in your fridge. You've got it for a while.
That sounds so gorgeous. I should make the time to do all these things, but if I could buy your products, it would be amazing. Have you ever thought of doing that?
Yeah, we've got some exciting plans for the future for the Foraging Chef, and that is part of the plans in the future. It won't be just doing private chef work and pop-ups. That's not our plans forever.
And there will be some more foraging tours in the summer, I gather.
Yes, we'll be doing more as and when we go. All of our slots this year so far have been taken up before we've even advertised them. So
that's pretty good going. And so basically people will find out about you via The Foraging Chef on Instagram, is that right?
Yeah, Instagram and Facebook are the best places to find us. Type in The Foraging Chef and there's a big picture of my face that it comes up with. Follow that.
A very distinctive face and a very long beard. Thank you, Steve.
Now, Sunday is Farmers Market Day. On Sunday at Cambridge Market, you'll find stalls like Cam Cattle, The Fishmonger, Simon's Veg Stall, and amongst them is Claire Barker, who runs a well-established stall full of goods picked and produced on her farm.
My name's Claire.
And the name of your stall?
It's Brownsfield Farm.
Where is Brownsfield Farm?
Over, just off the guided busway near St Ives.
And you told me that you've been running your stall here at Cambridge Market for quite a while now.
Yes, I started, I think, in 2000, something like that. I'd been baking cakes. My mother used to cook for the WI, and I thought I'd give it a go. And then we thought perhaps we could carry on from the farm using farm products.
So you've got lots of fresh asparagus and rhubarb on your stall today. Has it been a good year for the harvest?
I think we've had a long, wet winter, so I think the soil has been up to capacity, really, with water. And we've got a nice, loamy soil where we are. We haven't really felt it. I heard somebody say they'd got a very high water table. We're down by the river, so I guess that's perhaps what we have as well, a decent high water table. We were only just beginning to feel effects of the drought.
Can I ask a silly question, but just to help for anyone who's like a first-time listener, the difference between your asparagus and rhubarb compared to if you were to buy it in the supermarket, like size and flavour?
Oh, golly. I think we're not as formulaic as a supermarket. They will insist on a size, on a length, on a weight, on a... Whereas we pick it all and then sort it. So if you come to my stall, you can choose whether to have the little thin ones or the big fat stems, because I'm selling all that I pick rather than just the stuff I've ordered off somebody else.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
And we have an organic farm. We've got 40 acres of top fruit, apples, pears and plums, two or three, I should think, acres of asparagus.
The asparagus is really moving fast today, isn't it?
It's got a reputation. Yes, I think it's Simon's Veg Store has a very popular following, and I get the spin-off from that. I think with any, you get good days and bad, don't you? I certainly enjoy standing on the stall. Some of the prep I don't enjoy quite so much. I mean, apple peeling's tedious. But yes, coming out and doing this, and sometimes the weather, you think, is it really going to rain on me all day? I'm proud of what we produce, so I'm glad to be able to share it. And I like talking to people. Once I start, there's no stopping me. It comes as a surprise to me that the people I see on a daily basis have babies and grow, the children grow up and the children come, and it shouldn't surprise you, really. But I'm not the sort of person that knows people. Sounds weird, you see.
We should talk about the cakes that you supply.
They're pies, apple pies. They're actually not my baby, they're my husband's baby. I can't make pastry, but he can. He inherited that from his mother, and he's handed it on to his daughters. I don't know if you inherit pastry, but he has. Apple and blackberry I have today, apple and gooseberry. I did have a rhubarb and raspberry. I just make a few cakes. I mostly make the jams and marmalades. Again, learned from my mother and the WI.
Yeah.
From the products that we grow, mostly, I make an apple jelly, different flavoured apple jellies, plum jam out of the plums, and blackcurrant jam and orange marmalade. They're really things I like making, as opposed to... I get asked a lot for strawberry and raspberry jam, which I'm not really competent to make, so I'm sorry I don't make them. I think the biggest thing with making jams and jellies is having the equipment and being able to set it up, which makes it nice for me because I do have the equipment and the systems. Whereas if you only do it once a year, the pan's always at the back of the cupboard or you haven't got the right sugar in. So it's just a pleasure. I do enjoy that. That is one of the bits of the job that I enjoy.
Claire's marmalade is made with Seville oranges, very seasonal. Only available for a month in January.
Yes, we buy them all in, chop them up and freeze them so that I make a fresh batch probably every week.
Chunky cut, thin cut.
I'm afraid I do it for me as much as anything. So if you like what I like, I've probably got it.
The days that you are here on the market, is it just Sundays?
Yes, I'm just here on a Sunday. I think originally, particularly this aisle, was set up as a farmer's market aisle. So we've got here, we've got fish, meat, vegetables. Yeah. There was a chicken and egg lady. The olives are still here. So it was local and artisan foods.
We've noticed over the years how many more food stalls have come into the market and how it's receded from clothes and other things. What do you think of that?
I think that's part of the progress that you're getting, that stuff changes over time. I think people want street food. I think people are enjoying tasting Argentine, Greek, Iranian food, whatever.
What would be the next fresh things on your stall? You know, once asparagus goes out of season and rhubarb, you'd replace them with something else.
We'll move on to the currants, the red currants probably, and then that'll be followed by plums, apples, pears. It is good fun. I suppose what I've got to say, and it's not, I don't know if it's broadcastable, but I'm getting to an age where I'm not enjoying some aspects and thinking, can I retire now? But I think I would horribly miss doing this if I did. And it's maybe not so much stopping as stepping back, because I would seriously miss doing this. So yes, I do thoroughly enjoy doing it, but maybe not all the time. I'm proud of the products that we grow, and perhaps even the ethos that we represent, my husband, my family, because there are a lot of us in the background. My daughter's beginning to take over, so maybe we'll carry on.
So your daughter has taken on yours and your husband's traits in regards to cooking and...
We're still doing the cooking at the moment, but yes, we'll see if somebody wants to come and do the cooking.
Claire, thank you very much for letting me speak with you on this very busy Sunday.
Well, thank you very much for talking to me. It's been a pleasure.
And you're listening to Flavour on Cambridge Radio.
Fruit pies, blackcurrant jams, plum jams, dark orange marmalade, so dark it looks like a jar of chilies. Then there's the jellies, herb jellies, apple jelly, crab apple jelly with ginger, apple jelly with cinnamon, Bramley apple jelly, apple and blackberry jelly, honeys, smooth and set, pies, applesauce, cake slices and muesli bars. All of this homemade from Brownsfield Farm.
So on Saturdays you can find Claire's Brownsfield Farm stall in Ely or St Ives at the farmer's market, depending. And then on Sundays, it's always here at Cambridge Market.
That's right. So for our final feature today, we've covered many projects by Transition Cambridge in the past, but we've never really focused on what Transition Cambridge is. It's a movement. It's about encouraging low carbon use, low energy, understanding of food quality and food miles. Don't switch over. This is honestly good. It's fun and it's social. Transition Cambridge is made up of groups. There are links to them on transitioncambridge.org. Just go along. Choose whatever takes your fancy. They have plant swap events. They have the Empty Common Community Garden, a large site where everyone can come along and garden together, essentially, and you can take home what you grow. You could learn about permaculture, water and gardening initiatives to help grow your own food and save energy. Transition Cambridge is one of those brilliant things that you don't know about until you do. And don't think that if you should sign up that you can't get out of it, because you can do as much or as little as you like. Here's a few words from volunteers I met at the Empty Common Community Garden just last week.
It's the being able to sort of do something here 1 week and then come back 4 weeks later and see. So there's some beetroots over there that I helped plant, and now I'm coming back and they're sprouting out of the ground. And it's not often in your usual life that you get to see something so obviously happen over the long term, over weeks, instead of, you know, you have to, because everything's so quick nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah,
you have to
do,
everything's all, I have to do this today or this week or something. I mean, I've only been coming here for 2 months or so, but seeing something over the entire year is just really rewarding.
Can I ask how you found out about Transition?
Oh, well, I came onto Transition through Empty Common, so I was specifically looking for somewhere that I'd be able to do this. I can't remember why, but I searched online for just community gardens because I'd heard of the concept. Mm. I was drawn to this place, and then it was through that that I found out about Transition. So I've been, I'm probably more involved with the garden than I am with, in fact, I'm not involved with Transition.
Although the reality is that you actually are.
Yes, that's actually true, isn't it? Yeah, because it's all part of, I mean, that's the point, isn't it? Everything feeds into everything else.
I was going to say, when I started in Hastings with the transition movement, I was actually concerned about water. I still am concerned about water, and I think water is one of the most main things that we are going to have some kind of way of sharing the commons of the water. Mm-hmm. But also, in going along to those meetings and thinking about water, I realised that I was not able to do anything in that realm. But then I got involved with the community-supported agriculture, which wasn't quite a community garden as such, but there were 18 of us who got together and then started using a piece of land and started to plant up things. And basically each community-supported agriculture works differently. Sometimes it's baskets and bags and box schemes. Mm. But basically what we would do is what we're doing here today, digging up potatoes is such fun.
The first day I came here, I didn't even contribute to the gardening at all, but I was at the end, we were just chatting for ages, and we walked around and wild garlic and spinach was just thrust into my hands as I left, and I walked home just holding a bunch of fresh produce. And that was my first day there. I hadn't contributed at all. They're like, no, please, just have some of it. And in fact, I think you said you have to pick some of it, otherwise it won't keep growing.
Right. The more you pick, the more you get. And it's that sort of thing where it's not a reciprocal one for one. It's a moving it forward, passing it forward, and somebody will benefit, and you know, you will get your own benefit at some point.
And therefore, it feels much more of a group concern.
Yeah.
Thanks very much, Yvonne. Thanks, Tim.
Oh, thank you very much. Nice to meet you.
Great.
There are so many cool free things going on in this city. You know, if I hadn't joined this radio programme, I wouldn't have known about Transition Cambridge. I'd be sitting at home bored, waiting until I can complain about going back to work on Monday. Visiting CoFarm this week, chatting with the volunteers at Transition Cambridge, there are dozens of avenues you can go down, projects you can follow, and really great people that you can meet. And I don't mean tie-dyed agenda-spouting hippies. I mean normal, just normal people who are great to hang out with. And maybe they think that a world where you can buy a pre-peeled satsuma in an individual plastic single-use carton might just be a little bit wrong. If you agree with that notion, then do head to a search engine and look up Transition Cambridge or CoFarm. There's no monthly membership fee, your personal data will not be sold on, there's no obligation, no junk mail, your pets are safe, they won't come in the night and take your firstborn, and you might just come away feeling happier. And there's the music signalling time for our wine news. And we kick off with the Cambridge Wine Merchants, who have announced a food menu at their Cherry Hinton Road branch. It'll begin with cheese and charcuterie, and soon they'll be adding expertly curated food and wine pairings and happy hour specials, making it a venue rather than just a place to pick out your wine.
On the 19th of June, Novi on Regent Street has a wine and dine put on by local winemakers Gutter and Stars. There'll be five new release wines paired with plates designed by the Novi team. Gutter and Stars winemaker Chris Wilson will be there to take you through the evening. And booking is available via the Novi's website.
And finally, looking ahead to the 1st of July, the Finn Boys restaurant on Mill Road will be hosting a South American wine dinner. Lots of bold, bright flavours across five courses paired with wines from Argentina, Chile and Uruguay. Whilst the dishes will feature lime-cured prawns in a green ceviche, Cornish sole with mint kombu vinegar and seared tuna with brown butter dashi. Seats are limited for this, so you'll need to book early to secure a spot. I had a green ceviche once, it took weeks to clear up, but that is all for the news. There's the music tingling time for news from social media, and we start with very high praise for Jack's Gelato. Observer writer and author Nigel Slater spent a few days in Cambridge to launch a new edition of his book, Toast. And he posted on Instagram to say, "The passion fruit ice cream at Jack's Gelato was so good, I went back twice." I'm sure Jack's got to be happy with that. Next up is Buren, who is, they haven't been open long on Mill Road, but it's already been recognised as a local gem by the Good Food Guide. Buren is run by the team behind Steak and Honour, and they describe Buren as a comfortable bistro with a simple, well-priced menu, a few specials, a snappy wine list. So well done to them. Finn Boys have posted with the question, "What's been your favourite Finn Boys dish and what would you like to see back on the menu?" That would be a good question for Alan, actually, because he enjoys eating there. And finally, Coffee World, who featured on our programme over the years, have a new Kenya AA blend. Freshly roasted in Cambridge with blackcurrant, butterscotch and cherry flavours, this bean comes from Kenya's Kiambu County's iron-rich semi-volcanic soils. The Kenya AA blend is now available to order online from Coffee World, or you can go in and buy it from their espresso bar. Coffee World are based at Cambridge Road, just off the Milton Roundabout. And that is our very brief and very quick look at social media for today. There's Green Onion signalling the start of our job section, and the Pear and Olive restaurants are looking for a demi-chef de partie to work Wednesdays to Saturdays, a kitchen porter for 1 to 2 days a week, and a front-of-house team manager, also 1 to 2 days a week. If you're interested, just email restaurant@pearandolive.co.uk.
Stapleford Granary are seeking baristas and kitchen staff. No experience is necessary. You'll receive full training on the job. CVs can be sent to Tamlyn, that's spelled T-A-M-L-Y-N, at staplefordgranary.org.uk.
And finally, Flourish Farm Shop in Hildesham are looking for additional help because it's flower season. So, on Mondays, Wednesdays and Fridays each week, they're going to need people working in pairs to pick the flowers from the fields and polytunnels. And other teams as well to arrange and wrap them in the flower room. So if you're up for this, do give them an email. office@flourishproduce.co.uk. All of which brings us to the end of today's programme. You can catch Flavour on alternate Saturdays at 12 noon and repeat it on Mondays at 2 p.m. And we're also available as a podcast from all the usual places. Coming up next on Cambridge Radio is Strummers and Dreamers with Les Ray, followed by Jazz Today at 4 p.m.
But that's all from us. We'll be back on the 14th of June with Alan and lots more food and drink news, jobs and features. And so until then, goodbye.
Another turning point, a fork stuck in the road. Time grabs you by the wrist, directs you where to go. So make the best of this test and don't ask why. It's not a question but a lesson learned in time. It's something unpredictable, but in the end is right. I hope you had the time of your life.